Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of June 21st, 2018. It's the final stretch of the primary season, with runoff elections for the Republican nominations and several top races, including the governor's race, which is what our main discussion is about in this episode. We waited this long to give you the latest and greatest information about what we saw in that debate on Wednesday evening between Governor Henry McMaster and John Warren. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, in this case Thursday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest story, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections of this podcast instead of laying into that barista for giving you a plastic straw. Or as you start thinking about what to do once the Lead takes its summer vacation. That's coming in July and August, guys. Daddy Gavin needs his time off. And now, quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. And again, there's no campaign trail this week, guys. We have a long discussion. Sorry, this is a campaign trail life. You know, what are we going to do? We're almost to Oregon, where the campaign trail will end until we come back onto the campaign trail after Labor Day. So we'll be back on the campaign trail soon. Number one, the Associated Press reports that the Charleston City Council has voted to apologize for the city's past role in supporting slavery. By a close 7-5 vote, council approved a resolution denouncing slavery, promising tolerance in the future, and proposing an office of racial reconciliation. The vote coincided with Juneteenth, which is a celebration of the end of slavery. Number two, the state newspaper reports that the state budget negotiations have hit a roadblock, and lawmakers have failed to reach a compromise on how to spend roughly $60 million in the state's more than $8.2 billion general fund budget. The impasse left unresolved how much of a raise teachers will get and how to spend SC lottery dollars. Central to the impasse is a House plan to spend $54 million for a needed state law enforcement division forensics lab. The Senate doesn't like that idea, proposing instead to spend $20 million to help state colleges and universities renovate old buildings, an idea that the House has rejected. A special legislative session will be held next Wednesday. Number three, the Post and Courier reports that a week after U.S. Rep. Mark Sanford lost his GOP primary race, that President Donald Trump reportedly mocked the Charleston Republican in a closed-door meeting with his colleagues on Tuesday on Capitol Hill. According to congressional reporters outside the meeting, which was intended to focus on immigration, Trump asked the House Republicans whether Sanford was in attendance because he wanted to, quote, congratulate him on running a great race. Trump reportedly went on to call Sanford a, quote, nasty guy, at which point some of Sanford's Republican colleagues started booing the president, according to reports. And number four, the state newspaper reports that Columbia Mayor Stephen Benjamin is leading a delegation of mayors to the U.S.-Mexico border in Texas. Benjamin is the president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors and said the group has been spurred into action by their opposition to the Trump administration's immigration policy. Now, nearly 2,000 children have been separated from their families at the U.S. border in the past 6 weeks due to a crackdown of illegal entries, according to the Associated Press. Benjamin said the Conference of Mayors, a bipartisan group of Democrats and Republicans, unanimously called for an end to the policy of separating parents from their children. And just like that, we've buried the lead. Oh! I know. I'm sorry. The last primary debate has come and gone. I know we're late with the podcast, I know, but you know what? Democracy's not always pretty, folks, and relationships are about compromise. So please, no hate mail, or send us some, we don't care. The stage is set, and we are barreling toward the June 26th primary runoffs. So please fasten your seatbelts, the no smoking sign is on, but you know what? If you got them, smoke them. But before we get there, we have to look back at the final Republican gubernatorial debate and forward to the visits by the president and vice president this weekend on Governor Henry McMaster's behalf. So a very busy time, so we brought back our dynamic duo of campaign trail guides.
Hashtag double whipcrack.
Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier and Meg Kennard with the Associated Press to break things down for us. Guys, welcome back.
Good morning.
It's the highlight of my week, Gavin. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, God. What are we going to do when we're on vacation, Jamie? I hate to bring you the news.
I'm going to tape my own podcast in my apartment.
I swear to God. Before we even get into all this goodness, Jamie, congratulations on the major Caps win, Washington Capitals winning the Stanley Cup. I was there with you. I'm also a fellow D.C. metro area resident. We witnessed that glorious win. Just very briefly, how has that changed your life since then?
It has just opened up so much new joy and happiness.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
It feels like a gigantic weight off my shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to many more Stanley Cups over the years to come.
Very well said. Very well said. So, switching gears to the news. Jamie, you were at the Newbury Opera House last night to watch Charles Bierbauer and Andy Shane question Governor McMaster and John Warren on stage. What did you take away from that final debate? This is the third time that those two have been on stage. What was different and how did it turn out?
You know, it was a lot of similar stuff that we've seen before. I think the major contrast between these two candidates at this point that agree on many conservative policy positions is their approach to the legislature. And we saw this really from the get-go of this debate in even their opening statements. You know, McMaster says that Warren's plan is to, quote-unquote, bully the legislators into getting what he wants, and Warren doesn't really contest that. I mean, he says he has narrowed his attacks on the legislature. Mm-hmm. He's made it much more specific over the course of this campaign, which I think is an interesting move, and I think it's partly because he has talked to more legislators who have endorsed him over the course of this campaign and said, you know, you're not going to be effective if you go against the entire legislature. Mm-hmm. So what he's now started to say is there are a lot of good lawmakers, but there are, quote unquote, a few rotten apples in the Senate. Specifically, he's referring to Hugh Leatherman there, the Senate President pro tem. Mm-hmm. We can get more into the question about how effective those attacks are at some point here. But that is the central difference between them is Governor McMaster is positioning himself as the guy who can work with the legislature. John Warren is positioning himself as the guy who's going to work against the legislature. And, you know, the question is going to be how much anger is there among the conservative Republican base towards the, you know, what there may be perceived to be some ineffectiveness in the legislature. And we've seen in the last 16 years or the last 14 years before Governor McMaster took over that South Carolina voters have gone for the candidate who wants to beat up the legislature and wants to go in a way that is not so much cooperative with the legislature. That's going to be the real question this time.
And just before Meg gets in on this, McMaster did say, you know, some of these things that what could be rookie mistakes would be bullying the legislature. So he did kind of address that, too. And is that something, you know, I mean, that's really the only power you have as governor is that bully pulpit. Mm-hmm. So he also kind of sees that as being a negative, a drawback. That's something that he hasn't really had to employ too much in his time in the office either, right?
Well, it's just not his style. You know, his argument was that politics is the art of addition, not subtraction, that we've got to work with folks, that we have to build relationships as opposed to building battles. You know, I think there is a divide among the Republican base about whether which of those two strategies is best, and that's what we're going to see on Tuesday.
Meg, what were your takeaways? Did we see something different out of John Warren this go around? What were some of the differences or you know, big takeaways that you saw in this debate?
I think we saw differences from both candidates this go around. For John Warren, this was an opportunity for him to just be one-on-one with Henry McMaster on the stage, just the two of them. Last time they met, there were three other candidates up there. Not anyone got a whole lot of time, really. That's 1 hour is a very short amount of time for five people to all be talking about something. So John Warren did get more opportunity to get his message across, and he seemed more comfortable. He seemed more at ease, and he got in some zingers, too, on McMaster a couple of different times. For Henry, this is what those of us who've been covering politics here for a long time have been wondering if it was going to happen. We saw Henry be Henry. This is the Henry McMaster who was AG for 8 years, who's been in state politics for decades, who is affable, who's up there talking about his bulldog, who's relating to voters. This is the kind of guy that we saw on the bus tour for the past couple of weeks.
This is what you were saying,
Exactly. I've talked about this before. I've wondered if we were really going to see more of this. And when you asked me previously, you know, what did he really need to do to continue to get his message out there? It's just this. You know, and for political nerds like me, it reminds me of 1984. which is a lifetime, literally, ago for a lot of people. No. But in 1984, Ronald Reagan had an abysmal debate performance with Walter Mondale. It was awful. He was bumbling. People were just wondering, is this really our president? Is this guy want another term? But his campaign chairman, Senator Paul Laxalt of Nevada, said, you know, we're going to let Reagan be Reagan. He was inundated by facts and figures and preparation. We're just going to let the guy go out there and be who he is. And he nailed it. And he came out the next time. He won in a landslide. And we all know where it went from there. Henry McMaster often draws a lot of comparisons between himself and Reagan. He worked for him. He was one of the first appointed U.S. attorneys in the Reagan administration. We've heard it a million times. But we did see some of those similarities last night. He went out there. He reminded the voters why they've supported him for years and years and years. And I think it came off pretty well for him.
And again, let Bartlett be Bartlett, going to the West Wing reference there, which a lot of people, I think, just think that. But, of course, you gave us some great context and history on that.
I'm a political nerd. I go back to 84. What can I say? But, yes.
And, of course, let Trump be Trump, which was, you know, Corey Lewandowski's whole thing throughout the Trump campaign. And actually, speaking of 1980s debates, I thought also one of the strongest moments for Governor McMaster last night was a bit of a throwback to Lloyd Benson and the Jack Kennedy line against Dan Quayle. Yeah. You are not Donald Trump. Yeah. That you're I'm a friend of Donald Trump's a friend of mine. He said you're a good man, but you're not Donald Trump. That got a lot of applause, and I think it did puncture a little bit of the of Warren's energy at that point early in the debate.
And that was really right there in the beginning. You. That was something we were going to go right into, because that's when we were seeing all the fireworks going on between those guys, because the moderators were asking them, you know, McMaster, if John was supposed to get into office, you know, what would be some of the rookie mistakes that maybe you saw and the differences in you and when you became governor and vice versa? And, you know, McMaster listed off, you know, this is not the time to have on-the-job training, even though Warren came back and said, well, you know, Donald Trump, the guy that you're hitching your wagon to that you're really tight with, didn't have this experience either. Then McMaster said, well, you know, he's been involved in politics, not been in office, but he's been involved in politics. Yeah. And again, we did hear that from Templeton, also used a similar line. Catherine Templeton said, Henry, you ain't no Donald.
Yeah.
So we could have probably have seen Warren maybe use some of that tact, but of course he was a little bit more trying to point out the irony of the situation between the two of them. So kind of going back to that, that did really deflate his momentum in the beginning, because that was an early question. It was a really big knock in the beginning by the governor when Warren was really trying to combat the governor, and it was interrupting him multiple times too. Meg, what do you think?
Yeah, it could have taken a little bit of wind out of John Warren's sails in that regard, because a lot of his argument has been, I'm the candidate who looks more like Donald Trump. If you look at my experience, if you're really, you know, when you voted in 2016 for somebody who hadn't been immersed in politics or the swamp, which both Donald Trump and John Warren have used to describe Washington and Columbia respectively, if you're really looking for somebody who can change things up, that's me. And so that's clearly what he came into this debate ready to talk about and continued to hit on it a few other times. But McMaster seemed to really try to cut that off at the knees pretty early on. And this is coming directly on the heels of the major announcements that not only Trump but also Vice President Mike Pence are going to be in the state over the next couple of days stumping for McMaster. Mm-hmm. That's impossible to ignore. That was a lot on the minds of people watching this debate, as well as both of those candidates. So that's something that, regardless of how many times he tries to talk about how he looks more like Donald Trump candidate-wise, John Warren can't ignore the fact that that guy isn't supporting him in this race.
And Jimmy, to that, did we see Warren kind of recover from that early back and forth? And did he come out and maybe win and stay on brand in a sense?
He had some strong moments. You know, I thought one was when Governor McMaster, you know, again on this theme of connections to Trump, said, you know, you were supporting Ted Cruz. I don't know where you were at the inauguration.
During the campaign.
You know, I was
yeah.
at the inauguration. I don't know where you were. And Warren responded. He got some applause for this, too. Where I was at the inauguration was working in the private sector, being a productive member of society, like most Americans. Contrary to what Sean Spicer may want us to believe, most Americans actually were not at the inauguration.
We were definitely watching. I know that was part of our jobs.
You know, I thought that that was a moment where he somewhat recovered from that. And I also will say Ted Cruz is not an unpopular figure among Republicans in South Carolina.
Yeah.
So, you know, labeling someone as a Ted Cruz supporter, let's not forget that Ted Cruz did garner
he almost came in second
a significant
place
portion of the vote in the primary in South Carolina. So.
Yeah, he did say, you are not Donald Trump, and you are nowhere to be found during the Trump campaign.
Right. But I will say, you know, on the Trump and Pence visits, you know, the fact that we learned about that the night before this debate, I think, really upped the ante for John Warren. He had to have an extremely strong performance last night. He had to have some kind of knockout blows here to try to dull the momentum that Governor McMaster is going to have from those visits. You know, it's going to be so hard for him to come back from, you know, the last image that Republican primary voters are going to see before they go to the polls is Governor McMaster standing next to Donald Trump. And even if he had some strong moments, I don't know if there was anything that was powerful enough to blunt the impact of that visit coming up.
But we did see McMaster show off that personality that you were talking about, Meg. Some people can call it folksy, cheesy. A lot of people just call it Henry, and that's his strongest attribute. But if you don't know who Henry McMaster was and you're watching the debate for the first time yesterday and you're an undecided voter, if you're out there, please just hit us up on Twitter and let us know what you're thinking. Did he come across as too folksy? I'm thinking about that time when Andy Shane was trying to pin him down on global warming and he said, the water's coming up. And he, before he got into his like his big laugh lines, he was saying that he's working with the mayors in Charleston, North Charleston. Yep. They're studying the issue of, you know, these floods that are happening in the peninsula down there in Charleston. But then he gets a little folksy with it, and he says, oh, water's come up. And he's like, must be something melting somewhere.
Something melting somewhere.
And the audience was laughing. They were living it up. But does that play well with people that don't know who Henry McMaster is?
Let's be honest. People watching the debate last night not only know who Henry McMaster is, but they're far more informed than most anybody. People don't watch debates to get their first impression of a candidate. So already, people who were watching the debate last night, not just those of us who were paid to watch the debate last night, but interested people, interested South Carolinians, they already have some sort of impression. Now, you're right in that the Henry who was on the stage last night isn't necessarily the one we've seen as governor for the past year and a half. He has taken on a far more serious tone. There hasn't been as much opportunity for that personality to come out. So it is a little bit in contrast to the guy that we've seen since January of 2017 taking over the top slot in this state. But it is fortunate now, I guess, for anybody who really just kind of came into the McMaster realm during that time span to really see who the guy is. I've known McMaster since the day I showed up here almost 15 years ago, and I've covered him that whole time, and I believe that that's really Henry. I'm sure that when you become governor, there are certain characteristics, certain traits that kind of have to take a back seat because the job is very serious and you have a lot going on. Yeah. But
at the same time, you're also a salesman in a sense of the state and trying to
attract
economic development.
It's, well, selling South Carolina not only to other places, but yes, other countries, and trying to put a good face on the state. But also, as Jamie was just talking about, the job of governor is really just to, you have that bully pulpit. There are certain ideas that you can get across, but you can't actually force anything to get done. We've talked about it here a bunch of times. Yeah. That's just the way it's set up here. So it is in large part a personality thing. And now that Henry's personality is really kind of coming out in that role as governor, that could set the tone, certainly for the next couple of days, but maybe for the rest of the election.
And it's partly, I mean, it's an actual philosophy of his that he sort of explained early in the debate. His view is that the governor has to be a positive, inspiring force at the top of state government in South Carolina, that, you know, if you're smiling and you're laughing, then people will feel better themselves and that they'll feel better about the state's prospects. You know, I think the question's going to be, you know, Warren would probably respond, these are serious issues, that they're no laughing matter. And there are, I think, a lot of Republican voters that agree with that, that, you know, the state is facing serious problems. And, you know, I think there are times when, you know, laughing about it too much does come across as sort of insidery in Columbia and, you know, the cigar smoking in the back rooms kind of thing. So I think that it is clearly a contrast in style, despite what John Warren has said about, you know, him wearing his Apple Watch to remind himself to smile. There was not a ton of smiling last night.
There was a little bit of about it.
You know, he is a Marine. He is disciplined. He is very serious. He's going to systematically target members of the state legislature. You know,
and
they,
that's what, and he was, he maintained that brand. He continued with, and we caught up with him afterwards, and he did say, you know, we asked him because McMaster just talked with us about, you know, being positive and being that face for the state, you know, and then Warren said, you know, it's not that I'm negative, it's just that I'm realistic about the issues of the state. And it was also interesting because, you know, when they asked if they disagreed on anything about something that President Donald Trump has done while he's been in office, which is, you know, it's almost like a third rail to even criticize the president, especially with him coming. McMaster, you know, just kind of drew their parallels, talked about how he has a different governing style. But then, you know, Warren said, well, I do have some issues with those steel and aluminum tariffs because I'm hearing from businesses that are saying, what's going on? I mean, and then McMaster came back.
Exactly.
But,
yeah, he came right back in and said, well, you know, these tariffs are still being worked out and we're not really sure of all of these details. So it's like John Warren had mentioned something that, you know, the governor was like, oh, yeah, that. I've heard that. I don't really
Tariffs,
like that.
The offshore drilling, which they had already talked about, the MOX closure in Aiken. Clearly, there are things we know that Henry McMaster has disagreed with President Trump on. And yet, you know, again, I think because of the fact that the president is coming, because of the fact that, you know, look, we're 5 days out from a Republican primary. This is not the time when you want to be airing your disagreements with a very popular Republican president.
After the debate, also, Warren said that that Trafalgar Group poll that we saw that came out right after the primary put McMaster at 60%, him at 30% of support. Warren called that poll a joke.
Yeah.
And he said if that poll was legitimate, Trump wouldn't have to come down here.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Pearson, who's the campaign strategist for McMaster's campaign, simply said that that response, that entire comment, was false. Thoughts on
this
poll?
He said it was false that the McMaster campaign had paid for it. I would not put much stock into that particular poll. I will say I think that this race, this runoff probably started out pretty close because he came out of the gate pretty hot, John Warren, with those, with Catherine Templeton and Kevin Bryant getting behind him.
Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty remarkable show of force up in Greenville when he got really a wide spectrum of Republicans up there to throw their support behind him. And that's a very important part of the state in a GOP primary. I mean, to get Dane Hamilton and William Timmons on the same stage as Presley Stutz, the Tea Party activist up there.
Lee Bright.
Lee Bright. You know, you're really getting all ends of the Republican spectrum in the upstate. That was a very significant show of force. You know, I was surprised.
Ralph Norman's endorsement.
Ralph Norman's endorsement, sure. You know, I was surprised that Warren was not more active over the weekend, the first week. This is only a 2-week runoff. It's a very short period of time. You know, I thought it took longer than I expected to come out with a new TV ad. We did see one this week. So, you know, I do think that the Trump boost does maybe create a little bit of distance at this point between the two of them. And it's now going to be on John Warren to really make some kind of final push here to try to win back some of that distance that may have been created.
You know, one of the things that Warren talked about was regardless of how many times McMaster flaunts that endorsement from Trump and from now, you know, Vice President Mike Pence coming down, no matter how many times he says, you know, I'm the candidate that these guys have chosen. Warren did make a good point last night that Trump has a very high approval rating here. But he said, you know, if that really mattered so much in terms of this campaign, we wouldn't be having this runoff to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, like Jamie said, I mean, that, you know, when the primary came to an end and McMaster was first and Warren was second, you know, it kind of got off to a bang there, reiterating what does that Trump support really mean? Mm-hmm. What does that translate to for McMaster? You know, we're seeing with this visit that is a lot of fireworks and could be that last push at the very last minute, the day before the voting actually happens, just hours before the polls open.
Mm-hmm.
That really could push it forward, but we still don't know yet.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know if he really desperately needs the president to be in town or if this is almost like a pre-victory lap. I mean, is there any indication as to whether, I mean, even Andy Shane asked McMaster that yesterday. You know, does he need him there? Or what's the purpose of him being there?
Can't imagine that the president would be coming down here if he didn't have some sort of an inkling that this was going to go McMaster's way.
But is that the 60% poll that we saw? Did they send it to the White House and say, check out this 60%?
There's got to be. I'm sure they were doing other polls.
Yeah, I would think that they've probably gotten some other numbers, not just that one.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is the president doesn't need another L in his endorsement win-loss column. He just doesn't. There have been a couple of races where things haven't gone the way of the candidate that he had picked. I have a story coming out this weekend that's going to hit on a lot of that. So I have to think that there's something other than just the Trafalgar poll that the White House has seen, that they have people perhaps on the ground who have been getting some intel for them, because it's an awful lot to bring the president and also the vice president down here. So there's got to be something to it.
You know, I think it kind of goes both ways. I think you both would expect that they have some indication that he's certainly the favorite, you know, at this point. At the same time, I don't think they would be wasting their time coming down if it was not at least competitive. You know, we know this is not going to be a blowout, I don't think. You know, I mean, that could change when the president comes down. It could turn into one. But, you know, they clearly talked on Monday. They had that phone call.
I thought they were just talking about the greatness of South Carolina.
Yeah.
They were planning something.
Yeah, turns out that President's probably asking, do you still want me to come down?
Yeah. He said, and we just saw some tweets from him just moments ago before we started taping this that he's still out there tweeting about him doing all this full court press.
It really is. And yeah, I do think that Trump voters are savvier about what exactly it is that they liked about Trump than people may give them credit for. And they're not just going to latch on to whatever other person he throws his support behind.
Yeah.
They know that Governor McMaster was an early supporter of President Trump, and they know that loyalty is a huge part of this.
Yeah.
Right. And as John Warren has argued, look, I've never met the president. He doesn't know me. He endorsed Governor McMaster long before I got into the race. So, I think it is very significant, but there is still room for Warren to continue to argue that, he's the outsider candidate. He's the guy who's going to go drain the swamp. He's the guy who's going to go fight back against the legislature.
Because let's remember the numbers from the primary that led to all of this. Mm-hmm. McMaster finished with 42. Warren finished with 28. But Catherine Templeton was right behind him. She was the other candidate in this race who had that outsider mantle. She started first with it, and then Warren entered it this past February. So you put their numbers together. We've talked about it before. Clearly, that would surpass the number of voters who said that they really backed the more establishment, yet Trump-backed candidate. Those two things together still kind of make my head hurt. But those numbers were bigger than what McMaster had.
Yeah.
So we still have to figure that, too.
Yancey McGill is hosting a fundraiser for Governor McMaster in Pawleys Island on Friday night. So he's gotten the big Yancey McGill bump there at the end. That was an important 2%.
Yancey bump.
There you go.
Hashtag Yancey bump. All right, y'all. Well,
Yancey bump.
That was AT's doing. You can rewatch the debate from last night on SETV's YouTube page, setv.org, and on SETV's Facebook page. A lot of SETV right there. And you can check out Jamie Lovegrove's stories along with the entire Post and Courier's political team stories at postandcourier.com, and find Meg Kennard's stories in newspapers statewide and nationwide, where newspapers are sold. I think they are still sold places and online. Does that count?
I think so. The internet also works.
And check them out. Check these guys out on Twitter, too. Meg, Jamie, thanks so much for joining me, and we'll see what Tuesday holds.
We will indeed.
Thank you, Gavin.
In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government, and now history, I think, named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers used for when speaking to each other. And I'm joined once again by South Carolina Public Radio's The Russ McKinney, who's back with some state trivia. And like many of you out there, I have yet to answer one correctly, but I'm hoping this week my luck might change. Russ, welcome back.
Thank you. This is the week.
We're
into the slow, hot summer, so got a real easy.
It is the solstice.
That's right. And today is the longest day of the year.
So I'm going to take a long time to answer this.
A long time, but as a result of that, or because of that, this is really, really an easy one today.
Always says that, and I feel even worse when I get it wrong.
There are literally hundreds of official state offices in South Carolina, state government offices. Hundreds of real official state entities, agencies, boards, commissions, authorities, offices. We couldn't name them all, for the next couple of months. So today, my question is, I'm going to read you a few. And the question is, which one of these is not an official entity of the state of South Carolina?
I do love bureaucracy, so I'm feeling pretty good, too.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I should have made it a little hotter. So three of these are legit. One is not. Which one is not an official state entity? A, the Acupuncture Advisory Committee. B, the South Carolina Dairy Commission. C, Disposition of Dead Human Bodies Board. D, Committee on Special License Plates.
I mean, we have a license plate for everything, but I don't think that there's a committee that determines that. That's done by the legislature. But I'm sure there might be some sort of weird committee within DOT that looks at license plates and makes sure that they're valid and permissible for roadway use. The dead body ones just does not sound legitimate. I think we could easily dress that up with maybe some more appropriate language instead of Commission for Dead Bodies. Acupuncture, I believe there is something for that. And what was B?
B is the South Carolina Dairy Commission.
Dairy Commission, you know, there's always a dairy board. And I was just, I did that thing about the dairy the other day for the milk one. Some, and then the dead body one?
Should I run through them again?
No, just that dead body one. What's the title of this?
The Disposition of Dead Human Bodies Board.
The DDHB?
I guess it could be.
I'm going to say that one. I can't. I mean, let it be known that I'm also torn between Dairy Commission, but I'm going to say the dead human bodies.
The correct answer is B, South Carolina Dairy Commission. Now, there was for years a state dairy commission. The General Assembly abolished it in 1986. Yes, there is a Disposition of Dead Human Bodies Board. And there is a Committee on Special License Plates.
Because we have so many license plates in this state. Well, Russ, that was insightful as ever. And glad to be alive. Glad
always
you're
my,
alive.
Always my pleasure.
Glad we're alive and kicking here on the lead. We got one more episode left, and hopefully we'll knock it out on that one. Thanks, Russ.
My pleasure.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio. And tune in Friday evenings at 7:30 p.m. on ETV for This Week in South Carolina. All of that, this podcast and more, is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Follow us on Instagram at @scledepod, that's at @scleadpod, and you can see all of our photos from the studio, around the statehouse, on assignment, and our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at @scleadpod. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio. A special thanks to the Post and Courier and the Associated Press. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Caitlin Park is our social media consultant. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia on June 21st, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. The only thing that prevents shark attacks is an open dialogue.